You are listening to the Horse Radio Network, part of the Equine Network family.
Welcome back to the Horse Healthcast. I'm Jenna Bosgarden, Manager of Digital Marketing.
And I'm Ashley LaComte-Lozich, Head of R&D. And today we're bringing you part three of our Beat the Summer Heat series. We've talked about anhidrosis, we've talked about UV protection, and today we're getting into another health-first focus when we talk about heat, electrolytes.
Smart solutions, trusted voices. Your source for equine health and wellness. This is Horse Healthcast by Smart Equine. The discussions in this podcast are intended for educational and informational purposes and are not intended as veterinary advice. You should always consult with a licensed veterinarian or qualified equine health professional before making changes to your horse's diet or care plan. Hosts and guests cannot guarantee the reliability, accuracy, or completeness of the information shared, and as such, these discussions are not a substitute for veterinarian or professional guidance, and any actions you take are at your own risk. Products discussed on this podcast are not endorsed by Smart Equine and are not intended to treat, diagnose, or cure any medical issue.
So as a part of the marketing team, I feel like I'm pretty well-versed on why electrolytes become a pretty hot topic every summer. But from the scientist perspective, can you tell us why they're so important?
Yeah, we're going to spend the whole episode talking about why they're so important. But I think that the overarching theme is that they're like pretty vital to life. Like the having adequate electrolytes, having correctly balanced electrolytes, they're critical to like almost every bodily system that you have. Your musculature and your muscle function, your nervous system, nerve impulses, and regulating those, cardiovascular system and circulatory, your hydration status, like so many things start and end with your electrolyte balance in your body. So yes.
The answer is yes. And I mean, that obviously feels incredibly important. And I know a lot of those things, but I feel like I'm always learning. Like, I don't think I really knew that it had that big of a part to play in like cardiovascular stuff. So that's pretty cool. But, and I guess as always, like the little things, like little electrolytes that we add to our horse's feed, like it doesn't seem as if it should be that big of a deal, but they always do end up being a bigger deal than I think they're going to be. But
yeah, I feel like we talk about them like very like colloquially, like don't forget to take your liquid IV. And like, they're just like this hangover cure, or like when it's hot outside, you just drink your Gatorade because that's what you are told to do. But I think that understanding the role that they play in your body may help you to remember next time to like truly give your horse that electrolyte, truly offer that salt and trace mineral lick for them. And once you understand like the true importance of what they do, other than just like replenishing your hydration, because it goes so much further than that, you know, hopefully that'll be a positive takeaway for some of our listeners today.
Yeah, I love that. Knowing the hows and the whys behind something can really help it stick and really help it just feel like you're doing something real versus just, you know, I'm here to take a drink. So I love that. Great, great pre-takeaway. Now, to kind of get started and introduce what these are, can you explain what electrolytes are?
Yes. Okay. So electrolytes are like minerals that are electrically charged in some way, right? And there's different ones. Sodium, potassium, calcium, chloride, my favorite, magnesium. They're trace minerals in your diet that are electrically charged, and they have a lot of implications in different systems like we talked about. So let's start at the top of that list. Sodium. I'm sure you've like the tale as old as time is like, ooh, I ate pizza for dinner and I woke up and my rings feel tight, right? So regulating fluid levels in your body, certainly what sodium is there for. So when you think about an electrolyte and you think, oh, I'm losing a lot of water due to the heat or due to sweat, I need higher salt to help me retain that fluid. That is certainly what sodium does. Very good. But it also has a huge role to play in nerve and muscular function. Let's go back to when we talked about like sodium, potassium, magnesium, calcium, the ion channels of musculature and how we contract and release sodium plays a huge role in that. Important. Okay. Potassium. Here's another one that I'm sure we've all heard, like, oh, if you're cramping because you've taken a really long run and you weren't properly hydrated, go eat a banana.
Yep.
Bananas have decent amounts of potassium in that. So potassium works with sodium to help maintain blood pressure, healthy regular heartbeat, and it needs to be well balanced. So the ideal situation is a 1-to-3 sodium to potassium. So You always want to have more potassium than sodium. We get into calcium. Obviously, we know that calcium is good for our teeth, our bones. You know, we always see things about like when you're pregnant, you want to have more calcium because this is the first thing that can become depleted. Like calcium leads to osteoporosis, et cetera. But it also helps to control nerve impulses and conductivity in nervous system transmission. Chloride works, again, sodium chloride, right? That's like table salt. It's going to work to help maintain fluid balance and blood volume. Magnesium shouldn't have to talk too much about this. If you're a regular listener, you know how much I love
you.
And Jenna too. But magnesium, also an electrolyte, and helps muscular function, muscle relaxation, muscle contraction, and then overall cell metabolism. So there's a lot within all of that that we could kind of like break down. So those are like your core. There's more, but those are like your core trace minerals that are within your electrolyte category. And if you want, I mean, I guess if you want to, we could break down like the various systems and like how they all function together to make it work.
I mean, I'm not opposed to going pretty in depth on this just because cool. I feel it's not something that we talk about in depth a lot. Like you said, it's something I think is like a society. We're just like, get your electrolytes in. So I don't know, the more we know, the better, right?
I love that. All right. So let's talk about everything except hydration, because I feel like everybody that is purchasing an electrolyte today, maybe not everybody, that's a sweeping generalization, but let's say the majority of people, a good deal of people who are purchasing an electrolyte either for themselves or for their horse, they're doing it out of probably habit because they believe that it helps to replenish them for some reason and keep your horse more hydrated, which it does. But let's talk about all of the other things that are just as, if not more important than that. So first of which is musculature. Your muscles need all of these electrolytes in some capacity to function. So electrolytes are going to help your muscles flex, release, function. Good example, calcium, magnesium. They help with movement and potassium in there for cramp prevention. Proper muscle function relies on continuous back and forth exchange of these charged particles. And the charged particles are the electrolytes, right? This creates potential. So when the brain wants to move a muscle, Jenna says like, okay, here's a pencil. I'm going to pick up pencil. Or horse says, I need to swish tail because there's a bug on my belly. The brain sends an electrical impulse down the nerves. That action potential, that function in and of itself relies on the sodium outside of the cell and potassium inside of the cell shifting places. So that gradient, having that gradient forces those things to switch places. And that shift creates the electrical current that is necessary to communicate that movement. So like, without those two things, brain cannot tell arm to pick up pencil, right? So sorry if I'm like mansplaining, like nerve impulse.
You're the level that I need. So I appreciate you right now. I understand can pick up or cannot pick up pencil.
Okay. So in order for a horse to swish tail and hit belly and get off the swish tail, hit belly, I have to sound like a caveman. But so you need that gradient and the back and forth exchange of sodium and potassium. Once that signal reaches the muscle, it triggers the release of calcium. So calcium binds to the muscle proteins, which then unlock the muscle fiber, causes them to slide together, contraction, pick up pencil. Now our arm is stuck or the tail is stuck or whatever. Relaxation. To stop the contraction and allow the muscle to relax, magnesium steps in, removes the calcium from those proteins, returning the muscle to resting state, ready for next movement. And like, that's happening while my lips are moving, just talking to you.
Everything like, we're doing right now is all
I mean, it's mind-blowing when you think about like how I'm literally sitting here talking with my hands and the fact that my eyelids are like, it's nuts. When you really think about like how much work these little ions are doing inside our body for every single thing to go right, it's mind-boggling. Okay, so now imagine that something in there is off kilter. And so this is also bringing us back to magnesium when we talk about like a twitchy horse that always seems tense because they can't relax. The magnesium is not there in adequate levels to help remove that calcium from the proteins and allow that muscle to relax. The sodium, the potassium, the calcium, anytime these are either insufficient or in disadvantageous ratios, bad things can happen. Okay. So within that, we also kind of talked about the nerve communication. Electrolytes generate those electrical signals that allow your brain to communicate to the rest of your body to tell your body what to do. And they're happening at like lightning speed all the time at every second, right? Your heart health, they help to maintain rhythmic electrical impulses that are required for your heart to pump blood efficiently throughout your body.
Okay.
And then last but not least, they do, electrolytes, especially sodium, do help to pull water in and out of your cells to maintain optimal fluid levels and blood pressure, right? Because if your blood pressure gets too high, you're typically dehydrated, your blood pressure gets too low, your blood volume is too high. So making sure there's a homeostasis is a great word for like natural balance. Like we're just trying to make sure that our bodies are in a perfect harmony with the way that God made them and nothing is too, it's Goldilocks. Just right, not too much. And so we want it just right. So your salt and your electrolytes are helping to make sure that your hydration is Goldilocks and that everything is just right. So yeah, because these electrolytes carry electrical charges, they control osmosis, which is the movement of water in and out of your muscle cells. So sodium primarily is going to regulate fluid outside of your cells while potassium dictates fluid inside the cells. And again, maintaining that gradient ensures that muscle cells are fully hydrated and efficiently synthesizing proteins, producing energy, able to do all the things that we're asking it to do. And then I guess kind of along with that, they're also helping to maintain your body's acidity and alkalinity to make sure that your blood is at the correct pH. So like these little guys, these little electrolytes that we reduce, or a salt, like they're doing like big work inside of our body. Big work. So sorry, that was a lot.
No, that was incredible. So, I mean, how many follow-up questions is appropriate on follow-up questions?
That's okay. That's what we're here for. I'm ready for the follow-up questions.
First and foremost, like we talk about electrolytes a lot, like now when it's summer and it's hot and things are happening, but are electrolytes something that we should be thinking about for our horses year round if they're in work, knowing that muscle and cardiovascular health are so intricately tied together with that?
Yeah, but like, let's take a step back, right? These minerals are found in so many things that their horses are naturally eating.
Sure, sure. So, they're naturally intaking a lot of this just through their regular diet. So like supplementing is a supplement to what they're already getting.
Exactly. Okay. So in a perfect world, a well-balanced diet would produce all of these things in adequate levels for... Okay, so go to NRC 2007. Type that in your Google machine. That takes you to like the required daily value of all micro and macronutrients that a horse needs for life.
And remind anybody who's not familiar, what is NRC?
National Research Council?
Correct. Got it.
Fact checking on that. I think National Research Council. So I never refer to it in its full name, but effectively, and I will give a shout out to Dr. Brian Nielsen because he was my graduate professor at Michigan State. He was instrumental in creating those requirements. So a bunch of horse PhD nerds came together, nerds in the most endearing way possible.
Absolutely. They
created a daily recommended value, the same way that when we look at a nutrition fact panel on the back of our real or whatever, it's telling us for each micro and macronutrient, how much does our body need to properly function? The NRC 2007 is what establishes those for horses. And it breaks it down by like the life cycle stage that your horse is in. How old are they? How much work are they in? Are they pregnant? Are they lactating? So it gives you a breakdown. So anyhow, in a perfect world, a well-balanced diet, a forage-first diet with, you know, a potential complete feed or a ration balance or whatever, in some cases, just access to healthy, green, fresh pasture should fulfill all of those needs. Now, the reason horses in the summertime, and the same as a human, right? When you're outside and you need to replenish this because you are sweating.
Mm-hmm.
Sweat is hypertonic, which means that it is highly concentrated with electrolytes.
Okay.
It can have much higher levels of minerals than circulating blood or even human sweat. So the horse's sweat, very hypertonic. They are going to lose a lot of electrolytes via sweat. In fact, I'm fairly certain, and again, fact check me here, but I'm fairly certain that sweat is the primary mode of loss of electrolytes.
Okay.
So potentially they lose a little bit in feces and urine, but I'm fairly certain that the majority of it is lost via sweat. So like when you think about how much a horse is sweating, right? We talked last time about horses sweating a lot with that lathering because they have a increased body mass with a low ratio of surface area. So they have to sweat a lot to cool themselves down.
Not enough skin for how much horse there is.
That's right. Not enough skin for how much horse there is. So they're sweating a lot. Their sweat is hypertonic. It has a lot of electrolytes in it, which means that the more your horse sweats, the more they are losing those electrolytes. So which then means, of course, we have to find a way to replenish them.
Yeah.
So horse loses sweat profusely during exercise.
Quickly too, we want our horses to sweat. Like, We do, of course. Episode that we've already covered on anhidrosis. Go back and listen to that. So if you're like, my horse doesn't sweat, he doesn't need this. That's a different concern. You should talk to your vet. But we want to see sweat. We want to see lather. We just also know that when we see it, there's now extra steps that we can take.
Yes, of course. So we do want your horse to sweat to some degree. When horses sweat profusely during exercise, if they are experiencing heat stress, they lose rapid amounts of electrolytes. Yeah. So those are the sodium, chloride, potassium, calcium, magnesium, nose diving, right? A horse can lose several gallons of sweat in like a single hour.
Mm-hmm.
Like big time sweat, right? And I remember, I want to say it was somewhere between like 100 and 150 grams of electrolytes can be lost in a single hour of hard work when we're talking gallons. So now this doesn't always mean that your horse, I mean, obviously I'm referring to hard work here, but like scenarios where your horse is sweating can also just be in a hot trailer when there's no airflow. I'm a crazy person who keeps my windows closed when I'm hauling because I fear that some crazy person out on the expressway is going to flick a cigarette out of their car and it's going to fly into my trailer. So we are our doors and windows.
Thank you for that new nightmare that just got unlocked.
Sorry, I don't mean to share my anxiety with you, but that is one that scares the
shit out of me. Consider for the future.
So like horses get hot in the trailer. So they can get hot standing outside. I don't know what it's like in your neck of the woods right now. It is like 100-degree heat index here right now. So
it's
like
a cool 94 here. It's
basically Arctic. So I mean, you think about competition and training being the two catalysts that would cause this, but it truly can just be existing in hot weather, sitting in a hot trailer, basking in the hot sun and peak, 12 to 2 p.m. when we know the sun is right above us and there's nowhere to escape from it. So even if you're
days like today, you're going to be sweating.
You're hot. You're just hot. So yeah, that's kind of how horses lose electrolytes and, why we may need to supplement them in some scenarios.
Okay. So talking about all the different things this affects and how electrolytes work and move the body and how horses lose electrolytes, it made me think of tying up. And I don't know a ton about it. I should knock on wood. I'm very lucky. I've never had a horse who's tied up. But is it related to electrolyte loss or is it a totally separate health concern outside of that?
My understanding, and I apologize because we're just kind of throwing this in there and I hadn't prepared this.
I'm just left fielding this question.
That's okay. Just like speaking from my, education 14 years ago. My understanding is that you can have like sporadic tying up, which I think would be somewhat related to electrolyte imbalance, heat exhaustion, kind of what we're talking about. And then there's chronic tying up, which is an issue, I believe, like more connected to maybe muscle concerns or muscle disease in and of itself.
Okay.
So if you suspect that your horse is tying up, we can do another episode on different types.
We should take some time and like deep dive on that in the future. It's a good idea.
And we certainly, because now I want to get into talking about rhabdo and PSSM. So I think that we could have a whole episode on muscular issues.
But
if you suspect he's tying up, and you'll never hear us say this, call your vet.
Wow, what a concept. We can make it into a whole jingle.
Right, that's right. If you suspect your horse is tying up, call your vet. For sure. Don't listen to Jenna and Ashley on the podcast. Get on the phone.
Electrolytes and magnesium can do a whole lot, but your vet is always your first stop before maybe listen to two podcast hosts having a conversation. So thank you. Appreciate that. But then, okay. So outside of tying up, which is may or may not be related, are there other things that are specific signs of needing electrolyte support?
Sure. Okay. So yeah, tying up is it's not hard to, I know we've talked about some things that have non-specific symptoms. Tying up, it's pretty, I won't say easy to spot, but it looks different. You have short and stiff strides, very firm, painful muscles. It almost looks like they're they have a Charlie horse.
Yeah.
Shallow breathing, rapid heart rate. So it can mimic a little bit, I guess, of what heat stroke would look like. But I think you're looking for some different things, muscle spasms, that short stride that almost looks like they're unable to move. So if we're just talking about needing electrolyte support or when to supplement, when to consider talking to your vet about supplementation, great. The first would be dehydration, right? So how do you measure for dehydration? I have two key ways that I'm always looking for. And actually in the summer, I do these things every day, which is my neck pinch, the tent test. So I do a little and then you want to see how quickly that, and I'm going like this, that's not really helpful for the people who are listening. So you want to like take your thumb and your forefinger, and you just do a little pinch and you make a tent of their skin, and then you let go and you see how long it takes that skin to become flat again. And if it sits there and it stays tented, your horse is certainly dehydrated and needs a little help. I also lift up their little lip and glide my finger over their gums. If they have tacky gums, we don't like them.
So we want to have I didn't know about the gums. That's a really good
one. You want to have nice shiny gums. So like when you run your finger over them, you should have like a saliva, your spit covered finger. You want to pull out a spit covered finger. If you have trouble gliding your finger over, like it feels like sweaty skin that's almost like tacky and tough to move your finger, boo. So those are my two go-tos. And if you suspect that, you obviously can call your veterinarian for support. You can also consider putting a trace mineral salt lock in your horse's stall. We can get to those things later, but definitely that's the first thing to look for. Dehydration for sure. And then if things are getting a little bit more severe, so we're not talking about like just being a little bit thirsty, we're starting to see some muscle issues. So this is where you might start to see some what I would believe to be called like the short term or sporadic tying up, stiffness, trembling, cramping, you know, inability to move forward they don't want to move forward. They're having trouble with stiff back legs. So now we've gotten into, remember we talked about all of the different nerve impulses in the musculature. Now we're talking about, you know, imbalances that may be so moderate to severe that they're actually impeding the muscle's way of working.
Yeah.
Obviously, behavioral issues, something that you want to look. If your horse is super upbeat, like if you have a Tilly who's like jazzed to move about life, and then like suddenly you find them in their stall with their head in the corner, they're super lethargic, they're kind of listless, you can't really get them to do much of anything. Quite the opposite could be like a horse that usually is super chill and is now very anxious and can't relax. So changes in their behavior. Broken record here. Know your horse's baseline. Understand what's different for them. The opposite would be for Andy, who's like my, you know, I won't say dull, but my very hum-ho warm blood. If he's suddenly panicking, like twitching uncontrollably, unable to relax, something is up there. So looking for behavioral changes. And then of course, like if you're riding them and you start to notice poor stamina, weakness, stumbling, when I'm out for like gallops on cross country, I like do my trots and my gallops and sets so that in between I can measure how long it takes him to recover. If for some reason it's taking him longer to recover than usual, it may be worth, you know, considering an electrolyte supplement there.
Yeah. And we've that before. I feel like eventers are so good about having that like time in their head for their horse's recovery. Growing up in the hunter jumper world and the equitation world, like that wasn't really something that we did a lot of, at least not at the barns that I rode at. If you're doing that as a hunter jumper, kudos to you. But I would definitely encourage anybody who's not an eventer, whatever your discipline is, whether you're trail riding or lessoning or clinicking in a dressage saddle, a western saddle, whatever it may be, to do that. Once you've finished with your test, with your track, with your course, kind of counting it in your head if you're not able to wear a big watch, and just seeing how long it takes for your horse's breathing to go from the heaving after work to a more normal pace. I think that's something I wish I had done. I'm very lucky that my horses were very healthy for very long, but it's something I wish I had done to just be more aware of what their fitness level was. And if anything was wrong, I would have been able to count it out a lot faster.
And when you're doing that, okay, so when you're counting, I'm glad you do that because I do it too. And when you're doing that, something that you should always be looking out for is thumps. So you have like a I don't know what like the actual diaphragmatic flutter. It's like a hiccup-like spasm due to depleted electrolyte levels, I think most specifically calcium and magnesium. Their nerves become overstimulated, and I think it's like one breath to one heart impulse. So like their heart and their breathing start going in sync, and it feels like, I mean, it's called thumps because it looks like a spasm, like a hiccup, and it can happen after heavy exertion, heavy sweating, serious dehydration. So like you'd see it after cross country, after a race, after you're going out for a gallop. So it's visible. So that is something that you should certainly look out for. And if you see that, replenish electrolytes ASAP, rehydrate ASAP, maybe call your vet because that's a pretty severe.
Okay.
That is like indicative of a pretty severe depletion of electrolytes. So definitely look out for thumps.
Yeah, I'm going to count myself lucky that I don't think I've ever encountered that. But that
me either. Me either. Really
off-putting as like the mildest way I can describe it. Yeah, so lots of things to look for, which I think is always good to know. I feel like sometimes it's almost like scare tactics as we're talking about this, but you need to know the warning signs if you're going to know what do next. So always
it's not like the end of the world, but like we're just talking about things to look out for, right? Like yes. if it gets to the point where like you're tenting skin and you have, okay, like they need some more water. If it gets to the point where they are experiencing thumps, like you should probably get them on an electrolyte.
Yeah.
At least if they're going to be doing work. Now, I'm sure we have a spot to talk about the difference between like daily driver electrolytes and, okay, you're shaking
that
your head.
That is actually coming up right after I ask you what the difference between salt and electrolytes are. Because I feel like we've mentioned like mineral blocks and salt blocks. We've talked about electrolytes. I don't think they're one and the same. So I want to give us some time to like let you, you know, wax poetic about why they're different.
Okay. So, I mean, this is like pretty simple and pretty quick. So salt is, okay, we talked about sodium chloride. Salt is salt. That is an electrolyte, but it's not all of the electrolytes. So sodium, we talked about sodium helping with liquid balance, right? So hydration status specifically related to sodium, helping to keep water in the body. Very good for hydration, but you aren't getting the potassium, the magnesium, the calcium. So there are other electrolytes that would be included in like a broad, if you were trying to shop between a salt product and an electrolyte product, understand you're only getting sodium chloride in the salt and you're not getting the other electrolytes that you would be getting in an electrolyte. And that's it.
Okay. And then is there a difference between when people will order something that is, you know, labeled as a salt block versus a mineral block?
A trace mineral block should have all of those trace minerals as well.
Okay.
So if you're shopping,
you're also relying on your horse's desire to intake that versus something that you add to their feed and you more or less know that they get it.
Yes, but I'll tell you what, like horses are pretty cool. If I can find this study again, I will do the link in bio, or we'll put it in the show notes rather. But there was a study, and I think it was horses. It could have been cows. But my point is that animals are very intuitive. They put a trace mineral like bar out into a field, and it was broken down into the different minerals in the different licks, and there had like little windows, right? And the animal, and now that I'm saying it, I think it might have been cows, but the animal could go up and open the door to the specific trace mineral. They were not combined. So there would be like magnesium in this one and salt and or sodium in this one. And they could go to the door that they wanted based on what their body needed. So like they're very intuitive eaters and they know what they need and their bodies know what they don't need. The same way that we would have a craving for like carrots if we were like low on vitamin A, right? Except for like
animals are even better about it though. Like sometimes my brain tells me I crave ice cream. Girl, you do not crave
ice cream. I know. Yeah. So they're pretty intuitive about it. Like I've noticed with Andy, he eats up, he's always on magnesium, as we know. And he it like crazy when he needs it. And then in other times I'll find it sifted to the bottom of his feed pan. So I mean like they're pretty cool at knowing like when their reserve is full. So
we did have a horse that came in, this was years ago, but he came in, he was great. Like there was nothing wrong, but per usual, everybody put either a salt or a mineral block in the holders on the side of the stall wall. And that horse, the moment that showed up, he walked over and he bit a chunk out of it. In the moment, we were all like, wow, what a weird habit. And then after, you know, like 2 weeks and the vet workups and all that, the vet was like, maybe you should put him on something additional, put him on an electrolyte. And he stopped taking literal mouthful bites of the block. Still used it, but it wasn't like she was replacing it 3 times a week anymore. And you talking about the study made me think of that, how crazy it is. Because you're right, horses do know so much about what they need a lot of the time. They can't communicate it as well as we would like them to, but there's something definitely to that allowing them to have that free choice as often as possible.
Absolutely. My horses go through their salt licks like crazy. And I do also do like post-workout electrolyte pastes. So, but they you have to look at your specific one. If it's like a Redmond rock versus just like a salt lick or like a Himalayan pink salt, they're all going to contain different trace minerals. So you'd certainly have into which ones are there and which ones are not and kind of take it from there. But yes, you can have a regular old salt lick versus one that has trace minerals in it for sure.
Yeah. And I think that's a great note too, is that we call them salt licks and salt blocks. You are supplementing like that. That's a supplement in its own unique format.
Yes.
And that then leads us to, because you mentioned paste, we talked about the blocks, like the different types of electrolytes. Because you mentioned paste, we kind of alluded to the fact that there's dailies, like Where do we even start with that? Where do you want to start with that?
Okay, yeah. So let's start with like we are smart packs. So let's start with something that is smart packable.
So okay.
If you were to have a electrolyte pellet or powder or something like that, that would go into your horse's feed bin every single day. Your horse is consuming this to make sure that these levels are at optimal levels every day. fantastic. Now, we had talked about how when horses are profusely sweating, there may be instances after hard work, after a cross country, after a long trailer ride where they've been sweating buckets that they can lose gallons of sweat in just 1 hour of heavy work. So in those scenarios, which my horse doesn't gallop every single day, so I don't think that I'm needing to replenish those electrolytes at that level every single day. But after a gallop or after we're showing in cross country, I have electrolyte paste that I'm going to give him either before or after to help him pump up those levels a little bit, encourage him to drink a little bit more, and give him just some extra help. So,
yeah. And when we say paste, just for anybody who's not seen these before, this is literally like a dewormer tube. Like it totally. Is the yeah. tube, you shoot it up right in it tastes a lot better from what I'm told. Than any dewormers out there. So most horses do tend to actually enjoy them a bit more, but it's very straightforward. It is a tube, you shoot it in their mouth, they take it all down, you're good to go.
Yep, absolutely. So you can have like your daily formulas that go in the feed bin. I think there are even some water additives that you can put in their water. I dare not mess with Andy's water because I put something in it. He's like, this doesn't taste right. And I'm uninterested. So I leave his water.
Very much like Dasani and Aquafina are not the same. And he's very ready for that.
Yes, he's a Fiji water. We're very particular. Yeah. So
with water additives, I do want to note that those... not for Andy, but they do exist. We have a couple, like there's Gallagher's water that's out there. Some people will just straight up put like Gatorade into their horse's water. So there's a lot of different options out there. Those are just like two of the most popular ones that I'm aware of. Have you also heard of hydration hay?
No, educate me.
Yeah. So it's something that we carry because obviously, but it's like a little concentrated block of forage that when you add water to it, it holds way more water than an average hay or long stem forage would. And horses tend to like to eat it. And because of that, they're able to increase, you know, their water intake and their hydration intake while also getting some forage. And it's essentially, if you've ever had a dog or a cat, like you have to add water to their food to help them take it down for any reason or adding water to grain, it's the same thing without having to go through the process of soaking a bale or flakes of hay. And it's a little like foot-ish block. So they're super easy to take with you on traveling for shows, for trail rides and things like that. I learned about it, I think last year from another smart packer who uses them religiously. I always thought that was a pretty cool just addition to have on hand if you ever need it.
I love it. Yeah. Any way that you can get water into them, hydration into them, that's a positive thing.
Yeah.
So yeah. And like a lot of these things can be used in concert, right? So if your horse is on a Smart Lights pellet, you can still give them, you can put a trace mineral salt lick in their stall. Like we mentioned, they will lick it if they want to, when they want to. Now, there are going to be scenarios where the salt lick is not enough and they can't lick it fast enough or eat it fast enough to replenish what they lost.
Yes.
Especially in like really intense summer heat if they're in like consistent work. And then the paste can be used in concert with those two. So if you're concerned that your horse is having issues keeping up with their electrolyte balance or you're doing some of these things and, hey, I provide a salt lick and my horse is on Smart Light Pellets and I'm still noticing some of these things and he still feels like he's getting dehydrated, talk to your vet and they may have some great insight on what to do next. But there are certainly a lot of options and different ways that you can approach it.
Yeah. And with the more traditional definition of a supplement, like Smart Lights, like Summer Games, Apple a Day, things like that, I can definitely attest to the fact that regular people like me and Ashley use them for our horses and have used them, can use them. But if you're like, well, you know, my horse does X, Y, and Z, maybe I need more. Maybe they do, but also know that Boyd Martin and Jenny Brannigan, who are like some of the top eventing riders out there right now, they use Smart Lights powder and pellets and paste for their horses too. Ryan Wood uses them. So like, just know that you don't need to search out like these intense performance labeled electrolytes if you don't want to. If you want to, more power to you. I always support doing whatever you feel is best for your horse. But just know that like putting an electrolyte into your horse is putting electrolyte into your horse. So you're doing a great job regardless of what the brand name is on the bucket that you're using or smart pack that you're using.
Amen.
And also to note too with hydration, I know we talked about like the hydration hay and Gallagher's water and Gatorade and things like that. Something that I used to use religiously was the silver lined buckets. And I don't actually even know if they exist anymore, but they had silver lining around the edges of them. What every time you scrubbed your buckets out, which was hopefully in a weekly or so, it would help like renew it. And it helped create a fresher, better tasting water in your bucket. So I tested it with my own horse and I put a regular, just, you know, Fortiflex, whatever bucket, and then the silver bucket. And every time I went to go refill it, the silver bucket was drained. And the other one, you know, he drank out of it because he had to, not because he wanted to. So if those still exist, I should have checked before we started recording.
Wait, but this is really cool. I'm reading that they are antimicrobial to prevent slime buildup. So if I could replace all of my Barnes buckets with buckets.
Oh, 120 plus buckets.
Right. But I mean, God, we spent a lot of time scrubbing.
What is the name of it now that you've actually found it?
It says K&D Equestrian's Equifit Ag Silver Clean Bucket.
Yeah, the Equifit Ag Silver Clean. That's exactly what it is. Yeah.
Pretty cool,
so go for a lot. Take a look. If you don't have 120 buckets to replace in your large boarding facility, maybe consider it for the horses that you can replace it for.
Cool.
I thought those were pretty cool.
That is really neat. I've never heard of it, but thank you for educating me.
Look at that. We always learn something. And then I think we've talked about this before, but I'll just bring it up again. Especially in the polo pony world, beer is always one that I hear about being given to ponies after they work really hard. So I can't speak to that one. I've never done it. I have a couple of friends who've done polo. I've taken a singular polo lesson, which is really fun. Highly recommend. But if you've ever, you know, met anybody that does polo or you have an interest in it, a lot of that world definitely recommends using beer to help your horse replenish and drink more water and that. But
maybe it's like along the same lines as the Guinness. Yeah.
I think it's specifically like a dark Guinness that you have to use. So don't go out trying to get your horse drunk. That is not what we're doing here. But go and do some research on that if you have more interest in that. I just don't have a lot of information on it myself.
Yeah, I don't either. I'm not sure like what the actual like mechanical pharmacokinetics of in this beer in hydration. But I mean, I guess it could be something along the lines of like alcohol making you retain water. I don't know. That's something that
we're going to have to eventually do like a It's Only Weird If It Doesn't Work episode where
I love that. Like if it works and if it's stupid and it works, then it's not stupid.
Exactly.
You need to be like, okay. All right, listeners, if you're out there and you have like a crazy home remedy, we want to hear. I love this idea.
Find us on, we'll tag our social media at the end if you don't know where it is or anywhere else where you can come and drop us comments or DMs, but that would be super fun. So if anybody has...
They're going to hate us. They're going to be like, listen, I have been trying to get client A to stop feeding their horse beer and you guys. So of course, we will never encourage or condone this.
But these are going to be purely anecdotal.
Yes. I love it. That's fun. That's a really fun idea. So beer is top on the list.
All right. So keep that in mind, guys, for the future. But for now, two other quick notes are, I feel like common mistakes or like misconceptions with electrolytes is people waiting until they see something, like the thumbs, God forbid, or something like that. And then like, oh, maybe I should electrolyte now. I mean, it happens. We don't know what we don't know until we're there and we're learning it in the moment. But if you have the ability to add an electrolyte because your horse is working hard or sweating throughout the summer, now is the best time to start as always. And then also, I feel like a lot of people look at the pace, the licks, and the in-feed supplements. They're like, well, an electrolyte's an electrolyte. In a lot of ways, you're right. But in a lot of ways, it's definitely worth thinking more about how your horse needs to receive it and how much your horse needs to receive to make sure that you are truly getting the best bang for your buck as a rider who knows that not everything, you know, comes off of trees for free, but also just make sure that your horse is actually getting what they need in the moment that they need it. So like a salt look in the stall for when they've decided they want more, something in their feed if you know that they're working throughout the summer, and then the pace for when they've worked harder and you want to give them a little bit extra. So just making sure that we're using the right format for the right time.
Yeah. And like we mentioned, the salt licks are great. They live in my horse's stall year round and my horses do lick them year round.
Yeah.
But they are, some of them, depending on the brand and depending what you have, they may vary in the minerals that are not salt. So you don't know. I mean, you look at the guaranteed analysis, but there are some salt licks that will have magnesium and potassium in them. There are some that won't, that will just be sodium chloride. So like if you're just providing a lick and it seems like it's not enough, it could be because it's not enough. It's not the correct ratio of those minerals. So yeah, certainly assuming that one thing is going to do it all is not great, and waiting until you're visibly seeing the repercussions of diminished electrolytes is not the answer either, for sure. I agree with both points.
Yeah, perfect. And I think, well, was there anything that you feel we missed that we needed to touch on further? Or do we feel like that kind of covers it?
No, I mean, I feel like that is, like, if I could leave the world with like one takeaway, it is offer clean, fresh water all the time, maybe in silver buckets if you feel so kind. Give your horse free choice access to salt licks of any kind. And if that does not seem to be enough, if your horse is in rigorous work and you think that they are losing gallons of sweat and hundreds of grams of minerals a day, then, you know, connect with your veterinarian or your equine nutritionist and consider adding a well-balanced electrolyte to their feed.
Yeah, I usually try to come up with my own key takeaways, but I feel like that really sums up everything that we kind of wanted to get across in this one. So I'll add my own little stamp of approval on that. Nailed it.
Vital to life, guys. Vital to life. Can't live without them.
You can find links to today's products in the show notes on your podcast player or on the website at www.smartpackequine.com/blog.
Remember, we are here twice a month on the 15th and the 30th. And in between, you can find us on Instagram or Facebook as SmartPack, or you can shop online at smartpackequine.com. Until next time, stay smart, stay hydrated,
and give your horse a cookie from us.